Is up there.
We'll call the Board of Supervisors meeting for Wednesday, October 1st, 2025 to order at 8:45 on the clock. We'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The Open Meetings Act is on the wall to my left. Attendance by observation, Adams, Claybaugh, Haxby, Thiemann, and Dorn. Mr. Juergens is in the field today. Up first, consent agenda. Approve the general agenda. Approve minutes of the meeting held September 17th, 2025. Approve all claims through October 1st, 2025 in the amount of $1,221,156.25, except claim number 251000059 to Johnny's Welding in the amount of $4,702 to be voted on separately below. Approve and place on file correspondence.
Mr. Chairman, in light of Terry not here, can that be included in this?
I believe it could.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you want to make note, we'll just include that now.
Yep.
Approve and place on file all correspondence received. Approve Sheriff's Distress Warrant Report. Approve receiving Treasurer's List of Delinquent Taxes on parcels of real estate in the county, which remain unsold for want of bidders, and directing the County Treasurer to issue County Tax Sales Certificates. Utility Permit Number 1338 to Pinpoint Communications. Pinpoint will be installing new fiber lines along Southwest 32nd Road for the new landfill office. Pinpoint will start an existing vault at the northeast corner of Southwest 32nd and Locust Road, bore under Southwest 32nd Road, to the west turn south, bore south under Locust Road, and continue with the bore south along the west grader ditch for approximately 1,150 feet. Then turn west onto the private property and continue to bore located east of Section 17 and 20, Township 3 North, Range 6 East, Riverside Township. Approve sending a one-year extension letter to all the EMS contracts to those EMS contract providers. I'd ask for a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented, but including Johnny's Welding claim number 3. The new total would then be $1,221,203.27 if we include item 3.
Motion to approve.
Moved by Dorn.
Second.
Second by Lytle. The Wrights carrying the water again. All three of you over here. Any discussion on the consent agenda? If not, please vote. 6 in favor. Motion carries. Of course, with that, we'll skip over the first item on the regular agenda and move right to comments from the public. Any comments from the public on any items? Anything you'd like brought up in the future? Come on up, sir. Please give your name and address for the record.
Yep.
If you'd stand or sit up there, just so we can get you on the microphone there.
My name's Daryl Janda. I'm 5173 Highway 43. I've got a complaint again about the truck drivers going by my house again, coming down that hill. It's all de noto. It's just ridiculous. And I talked to people up at the housing district the other day, and they said the same thing. They've called the sheriff like 3 different times already. I've even talked to Deputy Sanders. He sat out there and listened to him. He said it's ridiculous. They start at the top of the hill, they come all the way down the hill, and he said the windows in his cruiser are vibrating.
Daryl, what road are you on again?
Pardon?
I'm sorry, which road?
Right up Highway 43 from Adams there.
Okay, 43. I couldn't remember.
That's the one that runs north?
Huh?
North.
Yeah, north and south road there, yeah. Right where T-Bone's into 41 there.
Yeah, okay.
So, Adams has... Oh, I'm sorry. We can't talk back and forth at public comment.
We can ask questions, though, right? No?
You're inviting him to talk to
okay.
you. I think the best thing you do is refer it to Mark. Mark can get a report. So that would make sense to me. And then
I'm sorry, Daryl. We can't converse back and forth at public comment. I always forget this.
Well, all right. When Weiss is down there, that's a flat surface. They come. You can hear them coming from the east on 41 there for heck, a half a mile before they get to the corner. And the other day, there was one come down the hill. He couldn't have been doing more than 7 miles an hour, just all the way down the hill, and he had, like, cars backed up behind him, four or five. I was trying to get the mail. I could have walked across the road. He was going, I'd say, 7 miles an hour, and they're all waiting for him behind him, you know. And he's a quarter mile from the corner yet, you know, just impeding traffic and everything. And I could have walked across the road. They're only going 4 miles an hour, the cars, you know. They do stuff like that. And every morning I can lay there in bed and hear them coming like a minute and a half from the top of the hill to the stop sign, you know. It's just ridiculous. And they're just playing. They have no reason to be making that much noise. And if they're not coming back to the end of the day or something till dark, they'll make just as much noise as they possibly can coming down that hill just to annoy me, you know.
Daryl, I would refer you to talk to Mr. Kunkey here. He's got some information that he could tell you how that can actually be changed.
And then sheriff is back there also.
Well, why can't somebody go out there, Deputy Sanders, and sit there and listen to this? You get it firsthand, you know.
We're not allowed to converse back and forth with you at public comment. I'd be happy to talk with you after the meeting about this. Mark does have some information, though. If you'd sit over by him, he can talk to you about this a little bit.
Well, I could wait around until the meeting's over. Yeah, if somebody wants to talk to me, that's fine.
Because I can sit and talk with you and Mark after. We just can't go over stuff at our public comment.
All right, that's fine with me.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you.
Anyone else like to bring anything up for us to address at public comment?
He wants to look at the housing development, the migrant.
I'll make note on this. The EMS contracts.
Oh yeah.
The last line on there, on all the contracts that go out, the last line says, "This letter also serves as notice that we will be reviewing the current contracts, and will advise of any proposed changes prior to the next renewal process." So all the EMSs will be on notice that something may change for the coming year, not the current year. But that'll be on there if hopefully they read those. We'll move on to committee reports, building and grounds, winter lights. Mr. Dorn.
Dave's here.
Morning, Mr. Jones.
Good morning. We talked on Monday about the LED lighting project is going good. They just have can lights to put in at the courthouse yet, and a few panel lights over at the sheriff's, so that's been moving right along. And let's see, on the east handicap ramp, masonry construction did start on that on Monday, and they got the old limestone out and installed the I-beam for a lintel for a new sliding door. So they'll be installing the limestone face on Monday. And then we'll be ready for LAMO plumbing. We'll come in on October 13th to start a demo on the concrete ramp and replacing with the new concrete ramp with the hydronic tubing. The only snag I did run into, our automatic sliding door, we're going through Fairbury Glass and they sub it out. That was supposed to be delivered and installed on October 20th, and it got pushed back to November 10th. So we'll just have to, the ramp will be usable without the door, but I'll probably have to frame it in and put in a temporary closure probably in the evenings or something with the weather getting colder now. So we'll have to deal with that when that time comes. I did bring up the condition of our second floor entry doors. The bottom rails are starting to get pretty rotten on them, and it's almost like the mortise and tendon joints are getting weak, so the doors are always kind of tweaked. So I did call a door company in Lincoln that's going to give me some information and options on if we were to replace those. So that's what I have.
It looked like that concrete was a little hard.
Yeah.
On the ramp.
It's that that bottom post support was, it had a rebar cage in there, so they kind of stopped on it. They're going to wait. They'll get a breaker on a bobcat to break that up. So
old concrete.
That's where I'm building grounds yet. We have talked about removal of the storage of the court records on the fourth floor and other places. Is now the appropriate time to make a motion to give them a deadline?
Now would be as good a time as any.
Well, January is only 2 months away, which might be challenging, so I'll make a motion that we would like it completed by March 1st of 2026.
Roger, can we make a motion if it's not on the agenda for this motion?
In light of it being two sides to the story, I would strongly suggest you move this to the next meeting and for action.
Well, no, I no fair. No, I just like the word strongly. That works for me. I'm
okay. Let's put that on the agenda for the next meeting, setting a deadline to have district court records,
county
court records moved out of the building
by March 1.
By a set deadline.
Yes. There needs to be a deadline.
To be determined at that meeting.
It's something we've discussed for as long as I've been on the board.
And with that, also invite...
getting pushed down the road.
Justice Geertig and Sherry to come down. I saw Monday, Supervisor Dorn and Sherry had a delightful conversation over where things are and how things might work, so... hopefully we can move forward.
A lot of stuff.
A lot of weight.
But that'll help, I think. But, yeah, if we put that on, that'll give some open conversation, and hopefully we'll get both sides, as Councillor Harris said. Anything else for building and grounds? Thank you both.
Thank you.
Equalization, we appointed Daryl Stannard to represent Board of Equalization to Turk. He'll try to wrap up some of these, since Turk's so backlogged, he'll try to wrap up some of the Turk cases prior to going to Turk with the help of County Attorney Harris. Finance and insurance. Nothing really to report?
Do you have a sheet?
I do. I don't know that there's really... is there anything on there you want to bring up?
A couple. Anybody could do it. I'll fill in for Terry. Blue River Area Agency on Aging, their budget request, $34,860. Transfer to from general to roads, $400,000. AC irrigation for culverts. I'm sorry, I'm not doing it right. $43,951.50.
Weak.
Beatrice Concrete, Sand and Gravel. For Rock and Gravel, $140,563.02. Somebody else can take over. Let's see if I can get this one. Manili Wagner & Associates, Engineering Consulting, $54,294.50.
That was design work?
Yes. And then this, the other Manili Wagner for engineering consulting for $45,647 is for the box culverts on the Claytonia DeWitt Road.
Thank you, Ms. Axby. Veteran Service Report. Mr. Mick, good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
The Veteran Service Committee met on September 18th. Members present were Don Junker, David Stege, and Robert Tai, with Mr. Hardig and Dan Pollux used. We had 16 veterans pass away last quarter, one World War II, nine Vietnam peacetime, three Korean. We had one state veteran aids fund approved in the amount of $1,488 for utilities and rent to a veteran, three from our county veteran aid fund, $74 one night in a hotel, $90 for a cab ride to Lincoln, and $373.96 for utilities at BPW for a veteran that just had a freshly newborn kid. His utilities were going to get turned off. Ron and I both attended training in Scotts Bluff. Thank you, board, for approving both of us to attend that. All my accreditations have been obtained, so I am able to help all veterans now with their different, whichever accreditation they require for their claims. Beginning January 1st, any service-connected disability will allow you to get your motor vehicle tax removed, so you won't pay anything on a motor vehicle tax yearly. I was working with the American Legion in organizing County Government Day. Only two local schools committed, so that event was canceled. We're going to look at different dates and try and get that scheduled again for next year. Veterans Day program, which will be held November 11th out at the Hevelone Center. That's coming along. I got the guest speaker and everything lined up for that. Avenue of Flags will go out November 8th at 9 a.m., and we will take them down on November 12th at 4:30. So any volunteers available for that, we'd really appreciate it. Other than that, I think that is all I got for the quarter.
Kyle, you want to touch on a kind of a cool story of a veteran being in the right spot?
Mr. Jason Harding and his brother, they were camping down at Big Indian, and there was a gentleman in distress out in the water. And luckily, I know Mark Mines was called and knew that Jason and his brother were out there and gave them a call, and they were able to go help the gentleman out of the water. I know that the Wymore Fire and Rescue Department, they were on hand also. And as an office over there, I'd like to start working something to give to Mr. Harding for their heroics out there, because that's a pretty big deal and should be recognized, in my opinion. And
I agree.
And maybe extend an invite to him if the board would like to say something to him, just in those regards.
Eric loves to.
No, I think that's a really good idea.
It is. It's cool.
It's a fantastic idea.
Timing was perfect on that.
Yep.
Any questions for Mr. Mick? Anything you can think of you need from us, or anything you see coming up that you may need? Hardships from government shutdown, anything else like that?
I'm hoping on the county level we won't see anything in regards to that. I never checked to see if the disability payments got sent out, with that being a federal thing. So other than at this time, I don't see anything that we need in this time.
Mr. Lytle.
Eric brings up a good question. You know, you've been on the job now for a spell. Do you feel like you're getting all the support you need, or is there anything additional that you do need from us? Don't be shy about, I mean, if there's stuff or support that you need from us, you got to let us know.
The only thing that I'd like to bring up is the local organizational meetings. It is after hours, and that's when those organizations meet. And that is a perfect time. If those veterans aren't able to come to the office during the day or something like that, and I go give a report along those lines, I know it's been brought up. I spoke to you in the office, and it's just something where I think my time should be accounted for. It's just a couple times a month, which there's local organizations in the county where, I mean, that would be extra time with the drive, but I feel that I need to make it to those meetings and get the word out about benefits or things that are available to them.
And those are specifically VFW meetings and
VFW, Legion.
And Legion. Yep. And what he's referring to in the past, since those were club meetings that the board didn't require anyone to go to, they aren't paid. So that would just be something the board would just need to talk about and decide if you want to change that policy. I think that, I don't know when that went into place. It was a long time ago.
Kyle, would you have to do that every month, or could you do it on a quarterly basis?
Their meetings are once a month. I would like to try and make it down to other towns and visit with their organizations at least once a quarter, get to those different organizations. And
how many meetings do you think that would be?
They only meet once a month. With the amount of people at the Beatrice meetings, I would try making it every month to their meeting. But the outside organizations, I would just try once a quarter to get to theirs.
And that's something we can talk about. I think that was before I was on the board that that was even pulled off, and then it would go lax and then get pulled off and go lax. And I'll say the discussion was because other people have club meetings that they're or shouldn't say club meetings, clubs, organizational, not club in a derogatory meaning at all, just organizational meetings for their profession that they aren't required to go to, and they ask, can I be paid to go to this? So in government, we look at stuff all across the board. How can we be fair to everyone so that the next group of employees that has an organizational meeting to go to that we don't require, do we pay them to go to that? So I don't think it ever hurts to go over this. So
the VFW meeting, I actually have an assigned position as the post service officer. The Legion don't have a specific title for me, but the VFW does, and it's in their national bylaws that the service officer, which is usually held by the veteran service officer for the county, and so there is an actual position in the VFW myself.
I do remember in the past, too, one of the things that came up that soured some of the board. There were hours being charged when there wasn't a member at the meeting, and that kind of – I do remember that being brought up, and that was an issue. That's since I've been here. Of course, that looks bad when someone's recording hours and they're not where they say they are. That, of course, doesn't apply to you or Scott. But
and I have no problem obtaining the minutes from them and giving them – for hours.
That just popped into my head, though. I was trying to think of reasons.
Which, you know, I've heard of different stories and stuff like that, of the extra hours and stuff like that. And yes, I will stay and conversate with the veterans, but I just submit my time for the meeting purposes. And I have no problem submitting the minutes from the meeting.
There have been some hours submitted, and by board, you know, by board rule, I've said no on those. It's not my decision, so it's whatever the board wants, and if you guys change your mind, that's what we'll change to. But do you want to talk about that at committee meetings, kind of go into more depth on it?
I think we need to have conversation about it, yes. I do think what Kyle brings up is important. Not every veteran is going to be willing to walk into the office and talk about things, and if we're able to put ourselves out in front of them, I think our veteran service officer needs to be in some of those places. So,
I do understand, because it's been brought up about flexing my time in and stuff like that. And I will do everything possible to make that happen. But if it's to the point where I do have a veteran to say, hey, I'm going to be here at 4 o'clock on a Friday, I don't want to have to tell him, well, 4 o'clock today is not going to work because I need to flex my time for that.
Probably along with that last training you had too, building that relationship with our locals is really important when times get bad.
Yeah, that training, and once again, thank you, board, for allowing us both to go to that training, because it was very beneficial, because with the way the overlap from Scott leaving to me taking over, Rhonda wasn't able to attend the spring training, so it was great that we both got to go. And then once again, next year we will go back to one of us attending the training in the spring and one in the fall. So,
well, we'll figure on talking about that at our next committee meeting on the 13th of October. On the 10th of October. What holiday is the 13th? Columbus Day. We have so many holidays, it's hard to plan around things. We'll have our committee meeting on Friday the 10th. And we will discuss that.
It's right here. It's got
I'm on the wrong month on my calendar, evidently.
Thanks, Kyle. But,
thank all you. Right, thank you.
13th is a real special day, anyhow.
Why not get everybody's
wrong month? You're on the wrong month, too. Human Resources, Employee Relations. there will be continued discussions with the FOP. We haven't come to any agreement. There has been some discussion back and forth between our attorneys, us and our attorneys, FOP and their attorney, and then the two attorneys talking together. We haven't gotten anywhere yet. We do have a retirement coming up October 3rd, and we'll have an internal get-together here. Lisa Moritz has been working here at the treasurer's office from July of 12 to this month, and she will be signing off for the last time in the treasurer's office. She takes care of a little bit of everything, but primarily real estate actions. So she will be leaving us. Feel free to go down and tell her thank you. Like I say, there will be a get-together here. You can ask Dawn when and what's going on, but good deal. But nope, thank you to Lisa, and we will be presenting her a plaque for her years of service, but she's done a great job down there. She is very, we'll just say soft-spoken. She didn't want to come down and be recognized, probably out of fear of harassment from the board or others, but we do appreciate her time. Law Enforcement Emergency Management, Mr. Lytle.
Gosh, you got anything this morning?
Agenda items, that's all.
Okay.
Minor agenda items as well.
Perfect. Let's roll on.
Gus, have you got the received the new pistol yet?
Vehicles.
It'll be months. Impact. Okay.
The one with the cows, or another one past that?
The one with the cows that were mutilated. There isn't money in the budget for outfitting these. I don't know if we want to do anything on those instead of parking them, but we're trying to go back through. I think in the last 2 years we've replaced 7 vehicles now. It's not in that line. So we can, you want to go ahead and outfit those cars. He did not have money enough in the line for outfitting those. He was talking about parking those. Do you want him to go ahead and outfit those, or do you want to visit with him about that later?
No, I don't think there's anything to visit about. I think we outfit the dang things. We bought them for a reason. Let's use the darn things.
And that puts us at almost, Monday he presented a list of all the mileages on vehicles. It appears we're in better shape than we have been in the past, but there are some that need replaced still.
That being said, it is his office to decide what he does and what he doesn't do. But
within his budget.
Yeah, well, we'll figure it out.
All right. Road and Bridge. Are you taking this or is Mr. Durham?
I can do it. You want to do it?
Go ahead.
We had our utility permit. The crews have been working. Vogescapes came in with their representative, Keith Sutherland and Tim Vogt. They joined our meeting. We ended up with $144,000 in liquidated damages because the project went past June 1, and they understood, they accepted it without any conflict. And so we'll pay out the remainder minus the liquidated damages, hopefully at our next meeting. I think after talking to Mark, there was one day difference between his number and what Minnelli had. And so I think that number will actually be $143,700, but just... They didn't have any issues with it. They understood that they were past their June 1 deadline. Jason Sims, Grant Township, requested that the gravel material for the detour route be replaced since we used township roads for our detour route, and we want to get on that. They're working on culverts on the Odell Blacktop, and then Christ Lutheran will be replaced soon so that we can get going on our grant project. We're doing critical infrastructure inspections, and we had to close one bridge, and they're looking for a solution to get that fixed. Sounds like putting some angle iron up underneath the bridge to get it back in working condition. Game and Parks also has no funds available currently for the Rockford and Big Indian, but we are on the list, so hopefully we'll get that soon. And then Mark got me the information on the two boxes we're going to submit for the CBMP, and I'm working on it.
All right. With that, Scott and John with Tallgrass to present the Trailblazer CO2 project. We will have our first audiovisual test here, so bear with us. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning.
Do you want to, since we're going to wait for her, do you want to take a couple minutes and let Eddie?
We could. Let's take a 5-minute recess here while we set up, and that'll just give everybody a chance to step out.
Too many.
You said yeah. We'll reconvene at 9:24 on the clock, and we'll turn things back over to Tallgrass. We'll welcome our guests. There's a CO2 pipeline that's been crossing the state. The one in particular will be heading north to our neighbors in Council Bluffs and potentially connecting to one of our local village plants as well as some of our neighbors' plants. But this is a good update. There's a couple structures that will be above ground that we'll look at. The rest of the pipeline, of course, is federally regulated, but Tallgrass is good enough to go through and give us a good overview of what's happening.
We'll do our best. So first, some introductions. So I'm Scott Prestige. I'm with our public affairs team at Tallgrass. Also have my colleague John Flodick from our public affairs team backing me up. And then we have Sean Bates. He is our VP of land and right-of-way. And we also have Paul LaRue with our land and right-of-way team. So if I can't answer a question, I think one of my colleagues will be able to. In addition to that, we have some folks here that also want to provide some comments about the project. We have Don Caldwell representing Renewable Fuels Nebraska. We have Darren Garion representing the Rural Pipeline Safety Association, RPSA. They've been an important partner for us. They have overseen the first responder trainings that have taken place across the project footprint. We've had over 50 first responder trainings, and they're largely responsible for overseeing those in the content and engagement. We've had 2 first responder trainings here in Gage County, 1 in Beatrice, 1 in Wymore. Speaking of Wymore, we have Mark Mainz representing the Wymore Fire and Rescue Department. He also serves on the Nebraska State Volunteer Firefighters Association. And the Volunteer Firefighters Association is another group that's been very important for us. We'll talk a little bit about community benefits agreement that we signed about a year and a half ago, but an important part of that relates to $400,000+ that were provided to the Volunteer Firefighters Association, and they in turn identified fire departments across the state that were in need for different types of equipment and materials. Those grants that have gone out, I can mention 4 that specifically benefited Gage County. The Village of Adams received a grant for advancements to their emergency notification system. There was also a grant that went to the Beatrice Rural Fire Department, also the Pickerel Fire and Rescue, and Wymore Volunteer Fire and Rescue. We can talk about any of those details if it's useful.
Scott, I'll also introduce a couple people, Rachel Krackenmeyer and Scott Sabatka with the NRD. They're both here. They've been working along with this as things have progressed, just for our local information as well, just so that people know why they're here as well, and I'm sure they may have something to add possibly or answer questions if needed.
Well, I didn't know if I should introduce Rachel or not. I know she's a living institution here within the community, but I know that she'll have some comments from the local economic development perspective as well.
And John may have.
You should have gotten a couple letters of support, one from a local farmer and one from our favorite local lawmaker as well. They're not in front of you yet. They're in the inbox somewhere.
We got them.
Okay, wonderful. I do want to note also just in the title slide here, TPCO2. So that means Trailblazer Pipeline CO2. And that's going to be an important distinguishing detail as we talk about Trailblazer, which transports natural gas, and TPCO2 to transport CO2. So some reminders about Tallgrass. You see this national map, and I've also given you hard copies in case there's something that catches your eye and you want to go back and ask any questions. But on this national map, you see 14 states where we have over 10,000 miles of operating pipeline infrastructure across the country. All of the green lines you see are natural gas pipelines, and then the purple is crude oil, and then the blue on this map is water infrastructure. An important pipeline to note is the pipeline that begins in the Ohio-West Virginia border. It travels west to Wyoming, where it connects with our Ruby pipeline that then goes on to the California and Oregon border. Combined, that's the nation's northern header system for natural gas. So very important. And that Rockies Express pipeline, you see all that connectivity with the yellow sections on that national map. Those are oil and gas production basins. Rockies Express is bidirectional, so that provides great consistency. Wherever that natural gas is produced, we can transport it to wherever it's needed based on different seasonality. You know, there's different needs in the winter months versus the summer months. Focusing on the Nebraska map, that Rockies Express pipeline is red. And you can see the blue line there, that is the Trailblazer pipeline. All in all, the state of Nebraska, over 2,600 miles of infrastructure and over 120 employees. Now, the purpose of this project is really to advance domestic and global markets for Nebraska agricultural products, and we'll talk a bit more about that, but specifically want to draw your attention to this map. So every map going forward, blue is CO2, and I think that's just important to note. So you see the red line, that is that Rockies Express pipeline. A couple of years ago, the two green natural gas laterals were built from that Rockies Express pipeline going north, connecting to the purple infrastructure that you see on this map. The purple infrastructure are the portions of Trailblazer that remain in natural gas. So you see the Trailblazer components here that exist in Gage County. Those are natural gas today and will be natural gas tomorrow. What we're talking about as it relates to TPCO2, Trailblazer Pipeline CO2, is connecting to the blue infrastructure. So the blue infrastructure is built. It's all mechanically complete. There's actually CO2 in the line. And we're a mere matter of weeks away from bringing 10 ethanol plants onto the system and sequestering CO2 in the southeast corner of Wyoming. So this is a project we've been working on for 4 years, and we're literally just a few weeks away from being completely operational on a commercial standpoint. However, there is also strong demand going east. And that's the point of this presentation, is to talk about a lateral that would follow a portion of the natural gas pipeline and begin to enter some markets in the eastern part of the state. This slide talks a little bit about why we're doing this. There is an increasing demand for low-carbon fuels. Now, there have been changes at the federal level. We actually saw yesterday the end of the electric vehicle tax credits. But regardless of the end of those tax credits, there are still a number of states that have low-carbon fuels standards in place, states with clean energy standard requirements, particularly for vehicles. There is also a growing amount of demand internationally, Japan and the United Kingdom being examples, where they're looking for not just ethanol, but that ultra-clean, low-carbon ethanol that the state is getting ready to produce. In addition to that, there's a huge opportunity to take that low-carbon ethanol and turn it into low-carbon jet fuel or sustainable aviation fuel. And the market opportunity there is massive. This map just is intended to show a reflection of the different facilities that are in close proximity to that Trailblazer pipeline. Again, blue is CO2, so you can see here a number of natural gas plants, ethanol plants, ammonia, coal plants. Our focus right now is really the ethanol industry. But in the long run, in years to come, there is additional opportunity for connectivity. You can also see that little tall grass icon or logo in the southeast corner of Wyoming. That's where our sequestration hub has been built. But there is good geology throughout that entire area for sequestration. Safety. Safety is super important, and I'm very glad we have two individuals here who could speak more to safety. But to give you some high points, first and foremost, the Trailblazer pipeline itself has a very good track record. Since we have owned it in 2012, there have been no leaks and no major injuries along that pipeline. Also, CO2 in and of itself as a product, non-flammable, non-toxic, non-poisonous, non-combustible. If you look at the chart in the bottom left-hand corner of this slide, you can see the comparison of the incident rate for pipelines versus transporting products by rail or by truck. Long story short, transporting by pipeline is 13 times safer. If you take that information about pipeline transportation and those incident rates and you expand it, that's the chart in the top right, where you look at different pipeline type by pipeline type, and you can see the CO2 pipeline at the bottom has the lowest incident rate. There's a lot of literature that's out there as it relates to the safety of CO2 and tactics and approaches for responding to CO2 scenarios. I think the important thing to emphasize is you don't need any specialized equipment. You don't need hazmat suits. You need your standard bunker gear that someone would utilize if they were responding to a house fire. You also have to make sure, however, which is really important while the first responder trainings have taken place, that you understand the tactics because they are different. You know, if you have a house fire and you're standing outside and you're using your hose, you're going to want to turn it so you have a long stream pointing at the fire source. In a CO2 scenario, you change the nozzle and you create more of a wall of water and you can knock down the CO2. So it's just important. That's just one example. There are various tactics, but the first responder trainings are important for that reason to make sure that the local experts have that additional awareness. The community benefits agreement. So this agreement that we signed with Bold Nebraska about a year and a half ago has been very important as it relates to a few different components. Certainly safety and public awareness. I mentioned the dollars provided to First Responder Grant Program. The initial $400,000 will be followed by an additional $40,000 each year as long as the pipeline is in operations. There was also dollars, again, for the trainings, dollars for enhanced public safety and alert systems, requirements in meeting with NEMA, fire marshal, and also public awareness. A really important point also is the additional landowner rights and choice that was built in to this agreement. That involves everything from surveying property to good faith negotiation requirements to creating choice around how a person even wants to be paid. So historically, you have seen easements essentially signed, and then you get a one-time lump sum. In these agreements, we provide optionality for landowners because it may be in their best interest from a tax liability standpoint to spread that payment out for a few years, eventually them getting more of those dollars in real terms. We also established a first-of-its-kind 10-year royalty program for the first 10 years of operations. Landowners will receive a 10-cent per ton proportionate share of the linear length of the pipeline on their property. That's in addition to that easement payment. They also have choice as it relates to decommissioning. On top of that, we also recognize that we are in communities. It's not just a landowner that may be impacted, but the communities themselves. And so in a similar way to the landowner royalty program, we stood up a program that for the first 10 years of operations, it will invest and continue to fill the coffers of these foundation dollars. We also put in an initial seed money of $500,000 to get it going. And so essentially, the Nebraska Community Foundation have dedicated resources where they can work with nonprofits in a few specific areas: child care centers, elderly care, and food banks. Our perspective is that represents the full life cycle within a community and want to make sure that we're providing that benefit broadly across that scope.
Are these numbers that you're giving, is this across the entire state of Nebraska or specifically for Gage County?
This is across the state of Nebraska.
As I was going to say, the numbers look great, but then it doesn't go very far if you're going across an entire state instead of a smaller region.
I think that the main point is that you have this 10-year program for the community investment, so you'll be able to maintain those funds on an annual basis. And then you also have the $40,000 annual benefit for first responders as long as the pipeline is around.
Yeah, but what I was saying is $40,000 sounds great if you're in a small localized region, but it doesn't touch much, let's be really honest, on equipment costs, especially if you're spreading across an entire state.
Yeah, that is true. I would say that in addition to this, Tallgrass has its own foundational pillars where we provide direct dollars for different opportunities. So as just as an example, in 2024, we provided $1.1 million to different communities across the development footprint and across the state. So it's an enhancer. I wouldn't say it's the end-all be-all.
Scott, going along with that question, is this across the state completely, or is this across the state in the development area? So where the CO2 pipeline goes, because this follows CO2 specifically, not the natural gas pipeline, I assume. Is this just down your path of CO2 pipeline, or is it statewide completely?
It's a bit of both. I think that there is some regional emphasis from a communication standpoint around the availability of the dollars, but I can tell you from the first responder grant program, I think there were over 90 or 100 different fire departments that were awarded, and several of those were outside of the development footprint. So we enabled these organizations to determine and assess the need, and then they're responsible for awarding those dollars. So it's not just the footprint, but certainly that's where it's going to be more marketed.
Well, I can add to that, too.
Please.
For the community,
John, could you come up to the microphone just for recording purposes?
My wife always says I'm so loud. Here I am. For the community investment itself, you're right, Chair, that is just along the pipeline counties. So is it 20 counties in Nebraska?
26, I think.
26 counties. So just that bottom part of the state for that $500,000 community investment. And when we talk about the NCF and the 10 years that rolls in, that's also just that part right there. So for that portion, it is, as you point out, just that lower part of the state.
Thank you.
The first responder grants have gone beyond that footprint. So I'm going to turn this over to Sean here, but just a couple things to emphasize. Again, blue is CO2, and so you see the dark blue line on the left-hand side of the map. That is the CO2 pipeline that was built up to York, to the Columbus facility that's owned by ADM, and we were also looking at connectivity to the POET facility early next year. That blue line has been built down, you know, to that connection point. You can see in the bottom, the southern end of Fillmore County, and then you see an overlap of the purple Trailblazer natural gas pipeline and then the proposed new CO2 pipeline and how they follow each other up to a point where then that CO2 pipeline is planned to stair-step up a bit further north as it works its way to future customers, including that Sire facility across the river in Council Bluffs. So with that, I'll turn it over to Sean.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. Just to kind of recap here on this slide, when we look at the lateral that starts up in Columbus, makes its way south down to southern Fillmore County, that's one of the laterals that's been constructed to date. So when we think about those particular laterals, we're sitting at around 260 miles that we currently have in the ground related to new development for the CO2. To Scott's point, right at the at that straying area, that's where the tie-in for the ADM lateral happens. But everything to the east, back to Beatrice, is going to remain in natural gas service. So if we move to, just run that for me.
Yep.
To the next slide, just kind of specifically honing in on Gage County. When we look at this, you know, there's some dots on the map that relate to surface structures that we're going to have in place. So those are important. I'll touch on those in a little bit on another slide. But when we think about the construction here, we're talking just a little bit over 28 miles. You know, again, if you're looking at the map here, the surface sites that we're talking about, we've got one on the very east end of the county near E-Energy, and then we have one back closer to the central part of the county near near Highway 77. So during that kind of construction phase, when we talk about jobs, kind of folks that we'll have moving around, in total, we're expecting about 710 temporary jobs. That's a slow ramp up. We get to a peak, then we start to ramp down. I'll get into more of that construction in a minute, kind of generally how that assembly line construction process works out. But just generally thinking about that, you know, 710 temporary jobs. Construction is currently slated for Q1 of 26. Thinking about tax dollars, I think, again, it's important that we're not taking the natural gas service out and away from Gage County. That will remain. But when we add in the CO2, expecting right around $2 million in additional taxes going forward over the next 5 years. All of this together, we think, you know, continues to support our engagement in Gage County. Trailblazer, the original line, was built in the early 80s, and that line has now been operated by Tallgrass since 2012. So just a little bit over 13 years here, just kind of continues to further the point of local community economic development around our infrastructure. So moving to the next slide, I know there's often just a lot of commentary you hear around easement acquisition, the treatment of landowners, the way in which companies like Tallgrass negotiate. And when we started putting this project together, when we went to the field to talk with folks, we gave, and we continue to give, so much deference to where do you, if you're willing to host and site a pipeline on your property, where do you want it? From an operator standpoint, that's, you know, draw a straight line, point A to point B is always the easiest thing for us to build and operate. But we realize that's not the reality anymore in trying to design and then build this type of infrastructure. So giving landowners that optionality of, hey, if you're willing to host it, if you're willing to entertain that discussion to negotiate, first let's talk about where you want the pipe on your property. So giving landowners that ability, and I think as you look at this map, you'll see a lot of the jogs and bends, that's more costly on our end. That's one more pipe, it's more fittings, takes longer to construct. But at the end of the day, we think that's really important because it gives landowners that ability to have the say in where they want it on their property. And that's huge for us. So that's kind of first and foremost out of the gate when we start talking about our routing, our easement acquisition. Next, as Scott pointed out, you know, farther west, we try to get into existing utility corridors where we can. Ideally, if Tallgrass is going to be operating two pipes, it's easier for us to operate two pipes essentially adjacent to each other. Long term, we think that's less intrusive on a landowner anyway. And then kind of three, as we're going through this, looking at the environmental considerations, you know, as we think about environmental considerations out here, is it birds? That's a lot of what we contend with, specific to environmental considerations, just because there's been so much cultivation out here. There's so much row crop that's actively being harvested every year. Specific to the easement acquisition, specific to Gage County, we're able to acquire 100% of our easements voluntarily. So we have all of those in place currently. All landowners, again, will benefit from that CBA royalty payment for that 10-year period. And I think when you look at that 100% voluntary easement acquisition, I think it just speaks to our approach and our commitment to landowners and giving them that say and working with folks to try to make deals that work best for each specific landowner. So this is what I touched on a little bit ago relative to the 710 temporary jobs. It's the picture kind of here in the bottom left-hand corner of the slide. Construction is really going to move in an assembly line fashion, and the picture illustrates a lot of the phases that we'll be working through. So it's coming out, it's taking that topsoil, setting that to the side, stringing out the pipe, doing any bends, any welding, trenching, putting that pipe in, bring subsoil, anything we took out for that trench, putting that back in, and then putting that topsoil back over. It's important to note, too, you know, out of those 710 jobs, we have a lot of inspection on the ground. That's not just inspection from integrity of a pipe, but also environmental inspectors, restoration type activities. So really staying on top of our contractors to make sure that, one, we are building in compliance with regulations, but two, best practices in getting topsoil, getting restoration put back. Kind of to the pipeline itself, we go above and beyond on the depth consideration when we're putting pipe in. We go beyond any federal requirements. So 4 feet of cover, so that's from top of pipe back to top of topsoil. So a good amount of cover there to kind of support anything that might be going on long-term on the property. Specific to the surface sites we were talking about, the picture in the bottom right-hand corner is just an example of one we've built in the past. This is a mainline valve. It's automated. The mainline valves we're putting in on this system are 50 feet by 50 feet. That's what's ultimately fenced. I think that's important to distinguish. The picture here is a 75 by 50, but again, when you think about the relative long-term surface impact, these surface sites that we're talking about, the two in the county, that's going to be the extent of our long-term impact relative to taking anything out of production. Everything else will be buried. Topsoil will go back over. If it's a row crop, that will continue. If it's pasture, that will continue once we're out and construction's complete. So moving to the next slide, just looking at some of our post-construction. These pictures here on the right-hand side are some that I took in the field back in August and September, just out looking at some of the construction we've done to date, mainly what was done here over the spring and summer. I think it's a testament, when you look at these pictures, just the quality of work and trying to get that production back, getting that ground back to a condition that looks like what it did before we got there. And that's not just putting topsoil back, but if we have any drain tile, if we hit anything during construction that wasn't marked, making sure we get all of that repaired, all of that put back in a condition. Once water starts moving or whatever's happening out there, we're not impeding any water flow that's historically serve the farm. So, you know, kind of thinking back on all of this, that's a lot related to construction. Once let's say the contractor leaves, I think the final two bullet points are huge. And one thing that my team specifically on the restoration end continues to support on a number of projects that we've put in, and that's not just having that contractor get up, leave, head to the next project, but continuing to stay present in the community, talking with landowners in a way that if they have ongoing issues, we're there to help restore those, repair anything that might happen, you know, say 6 months, year, 2 years down the road.
All right, and then one final slide as it relates to back to safety. You know, we talked about the trainings, but also comes down to the engineering of the pipeline and the monitoring of the pipeline facilities themselves. We, you know, all of the valve locations have automatic shutoff systems, but there is tremendous communication and layers of communication built into the pipeline itself and all of these valve sites. We have an operational control center that also has backup redundancy in and of itself, where you have extensive, essentially monitoring stations. In the room where this picture was taken, there's actually, I think, over a dozen of these different stations looking at all of our pipeline infrastructure across the country so that we know what's happening inside those pipelines 24/7, 365, and can respond with the push of a button. Those are all the slides. I do have two at the very end if we have any questions regarding what's taking place in Wyoming, just out of, you know, if there is curiosity.
How long does it take to if there is a leak, and that obviously doesn't happen very often, if there is a leak, though, how long does it take for you to detect that there is a leak? And then how long does it take for you to shut down the rupture then?
So instantly is the answer. Now, there are going to be different types of scenarios, right, whether you're talking about a pinhole versus, you know, perhaps a half-inch leak versus a full rupture. But in all of the scenarios, you can drop the valve with a push of a button. And if for some reason, while there is built-in redundancy and layers of communication to protect that ability to operate the system, if for some reason there was a lack of communication, the valves itself have sensed that pressure and can shut off automatically.
So you'll just detect the pressure is different and it'll automatically, okay.
And how far apart are those automatic valves?
It depends.
Approximately.
Yeah, I'll touch on that. So if you just go back to the last slide, the graphs at which that are on these screens, a lot of that is pressure flow. So as if you see a drop in pressure, for example, or spike up in pressure, that is what this system is looking at, instantaneous, based on the automation in the field. So you see those types of movements. These consoles are managed 24/7, and if there is a change, there is safety protocol. They're more of an electronic type reaction as to what then occurs. So shutting that system in immediately would be the case. So on the valves, it's generally right around that 10-mile mark, I would say, on average, has been our placement for those.
And then you have other requirements when you have water body crossings or certain roadway crossings where you might have additional valve placement requirements.
Mr. Adams.
When it gets to Wyoming, what is the end game when it gets to Wyoming? Does it? What do you do with it there?
Put it 8,000-9,000 feet beneath the surface.
That's what I wanted to know, yeah.
Yep. So there is a porous formation at the bottom. This is called a stratigraphic map. The bottom layer there, the Lyons Formation, which ranges between 9,000 to 8,000 feet. It has porous rock that has great connectivity. The CO2 goes down, and then it spreads out horizontally. And that spread can be anywhere between 3 to 8 miles in diameter, as the formation allows that CO2 to move on purpose in that particular layer.
So what's
layer.
Your lifespan there before you have to change? Or?
So it depends well by well. We have a system of 6 wells that we're building out. In our first phase, we're going to build out 5 of those. We have a 6-well that's permitted that we're going to see if we want to move the location, because the wells together will work as a system. So in this next map, you can see those blue dots. The 5 you see in the bottom left, those are planned and are being drilled. In fact, 4 of those 5 have been drilled, and we're working on the 5th. The 6th dot you see in the top right, that's the one that we're still considering what is the best location for that. They work as a system over several years, and so as the pressures of one perhaps might increase, then you might, sequester in a different well, and they work in unison as a team, essentially. But the planned lifespan could be anywhere between 15 to 25 years.
Is this used to enhance fracking?
This system is not, but there are clearly intentions with the current administration to utilize CO2 for enhanced oil recovery. Yeah, absolutely.
Your circle around southeast Wyoming and Nebraska and everything, Nebraska was in a big portion of the best geological areas. Was Nebraska in the running for that, or you just picked a less point of resistance, or how did you make that determination?
So I'll let Sean correct me if I get anything wrong here, but we have the 6 permitted wells in Wyoming. The reason why Wyoming has a strong advantage is because they already have permitting primacy that's been given to them by the EPA. They were awarded that primacy in 2020. Now, Nebraska and the state of Colorado are both in the application queue within the EPA to also seek that primary. States essentially are going to be better at permitting this infrastructure than the EPA. The EPA process can take a number of years. That all being said, we have one submitted well application that we have filed with the EPA in the state of Nebraska, and we're looking at some additional well locations. That geology is tremendous, and so there is a great benefit for additional economic investment in the panhandle portion of the state. But more to come.
Additional questions?
My experience with a pipeline, I'm north of Philly, and there's a pipeline that goes through it. And I had a contractor there to do terrace work. And when the locator was there, depth is a big concern because it was only about that deep. Because when he put his rod down, it went clink, and we had to reroute the terrace. So... Well, that, I think, was put through there in the 60s. And depth is a real concern.
Well, as Sean mentioned, this is ag land, valuable ag land. And so we have added additional depth of cover. While the federal requirement is 3 feet top of pipe, this is all at least 4 feet top of pipe.
But I think if the digging gets a little tough, they raised it.
Yeah, that might have happened back in the day. The land use changes over time, right? You might, when that pipe originally went in on your farm, I don't know if it was terrace back then. So it's trying to continuously work and kind of think through the future as to what might be future land use and trying to get that additional cover. In our case, with our contractors, if they can't meet that 4 foot requirement, then we are made aware. But we make those kind of commitments to landowners, oftentimes in contracts where we're bound to it contractually for that type of depth during construction.
Ms. Axby?
I was wondering if there's any negatives for putting the CO2 into places where it wasn't, you know, obviously we're man-made putting it down there. They see any issues with doing that?
So we take we're essentially utilizing the natural geology. And so in these different geologic layers, you're going to have oil, natural gas, different types of water. At the depths we're talking about, the only thing that is down there is a very, very salty, briny water that is undrinkable. So the CO2 that goes down into that layer, it has multiple cap rock formations above it that keep everything locked in place. And that's the part of using the natural geology that has been there for millions of years. And it means you can also you can plan the long-term quantities and the pressures, because it's all well-known and well-understood based on the geologic history that has been analyzed for decades in many of these areas where they have oil and gas development. Now, oil and gas development in this part of the country and in that part of the state of Wyoming is several thousand feet above where we would be sequestering the CO2.
So was Landman based off you guys?
I gave a presentation on that internally last week. No. Actually, I digress.
So I will say this is the first. I think this is the first time you've presented to the board, isn't it, Scott?
It's been a little while, but I think three or four times with short updates.
Okay, I couldn't remember because you and I have talked different times outside of the board meetings, but I just wanted to point out as this has come along even really early on, Scott's been really good about giving us information, trying to keep us up to date on what's going on, letting us know as changes occur. A lot of this pipeline's already in the ground, and it's benefiting our neighbor counties. We're Nebraska. Fillmore County, when they get a benefit there, it benefits us. Gage County, as we get a benefit here, it benefits Jefferson, Odo, the surrounding counties. So this is just another piece of infrastructure, I guess, I see in the big puzzle going through the state. There's a lot of pipeline activity happening right now, talking to those contractors. We are in the hub of the country, and that brings outside folks in, outside wallets in, that are spending a lot of money, too. So I don't see any real downside to this right now. I appreciate you passing this information along to us as we go forward, and hopefully we see additional benefits after the pipeline's in, being other businesses or other uses or whatever they may be.
And I think that Don Caldwell and Rachel certainly could speak to some of that additional value and long-term benefit.
Does the board have any additional questions for these two gentlemen? Additional questions from some of the other folks that are here?
When this first come about, wasn't you going to use existing pipeline?
So we are. The Trailblazer pipeline itself had already been in the ground. And so that's the blue and purple sections on this map. And it's what's given us an advantage from the standpoint of utilizing this existing infrastructure that's already been high-performing and has a strong safety record. And so that portion is the main line infrastructure where we have laterals that come off of that pipeline that go to different ethanol facilities.
Yeah, we're utilizing right at 400 miles of pipe that's been in the ground for, you know, for a couple decades, a few decades. So, yeah.
The way it was presented majority. The first time, yes, they were going to reutilize the pipes. And then we started hearing from more landowners that it was new lines. So then these lines will tie in with the new ones.
Are they all new, or are some of the lines being switched over? Wasn't it some of them to the west of us are existing that were switched to CO2, and then some of these to the east are new?
Yeah, so the 400 miles, I think it's 392 to be specific, that's original Trailblazer. It was originally a 36-inch natural gas line. That 400 miles, essentially, that is what we converted from natural gas service to CO2.
And then our gas, say in Beatrice, that came off of the Rocky Express with the laterals that comes up, and then we're utilizing the existing pipeline for gas still here.
Correct. If you look at this map that's up on the screen right now, you see the purple on the eastern side going to Beatrice. That part of Trailblazer, that original Trailblazer, is remaining in gas service. Part of our lateral here will parallel part of that, not necessarily in Gage County, but it's ultimately getting back to Strang. That's where we started that conversion, that 400-mile conversion, back to the west to Wyoming. But yes, the Gage County Trailblazer pipeline will remain in gas service. We brought that line up from the south off of Rex, the red line. That's natural gas service tying back into the purple, which is Trailblazer natural gas. So that's the connectivity between Rex and the remaining natural gas Trailblazer piece.
So are the pipelines all the same diameter? Or that they change from gas to CO2?
Yeah, differing diameters. So that 392 miles we're converting, that's 36-inch. The laterals are much smaller diameter. So 8, 10, 12-inch diameter. Rockies Express, that major header system that Scott was talking about, runs through Still City. That's a 42-inch natural gas line.
And one way to think about those laterals, it's like we're building the feeder system. So as they connect to those ethanol plants, it feeds into the TPCO2, the CO2 portion of Trailblazer for transportation.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you had said at the time the smaller pipelines are ran at a higher pressure, so it's actually like a liquid CO2 on those smaller lines.
Correct.
Yeah.
So, yes, that's correct. Because Trailblazer at 36 inches is a large diameter pipe, it will run at a lower pressure, but it is still that main line infrastructure. The smaller laterals, and they range from, I think, 4 inches to 12 inches, depending on the location and depending on the ethanol plant, they are designed on purpose to run at a higher pressure. And so that can be upwards of around 2,100 PSI. Now, when they enter the Trailblazer system, they have to go through a regulator. So it basically takes that high pressure to a lower pressure for then that mainline operation.
Mr. Adams?
This is just for my own curiosity. The product you're hauling, how do you get paid for that if you're putting it in the ground? Where's the revenue from this come from?
So you do have the 45Q tax credit at the federal level, and that's the tax credit that's been expanded or upgraded to support additional enhanced oil recovery. It's the same tax credit. But the ethanol plant, the emitter, they are the beneficiary of that credit, and then they pay us to transport the CO2.
Thank you.
So we build the road, and different cars drive on it.
Well, is there an avenue if someone's going to use CO2 to purchase CO2 off of this line, or is that not a thing?
So there are lots of ways you can utilize CO2 for cement concrete manufacturing, in the medical industry, cold storage, food beverage processing. There's ways of taking that CO2 and through chemical processes, turning it into methanol as another fuel source. There's a variety of ways to utilize it. The short answer is, when someone comes and they decide that they want to buy that CO2 at a higher price than the tax credit itself, then those entities certainly will choose to sell to that buyer rather than utilize the tax credit. And so this builds out a system, but I think there's long-term flexibility as to where that CO2 will end up going.
Any other questions for the presenters?
How often do you run the pig through?
For, I mean, it varies on the pipeline, its age and purpose. On a regular basis, it can be every year or two.
Yeah.
Well, south of me, there was the pig indicated a crease in the pipe, and they said it was probably put in when it was laid, and they just repaired it, probably 10 years ago.
Well, that's one thing, too. I'm sure with anything else, there's better checks and balances now than there were in the 60s. I mean, just like anything else that we check.
Yeah, all of that timing is we're not dictating specifically when that happens. There's federal regulation out there as to when certain tests, those types of things, have to take place. So more of a timeline based on federal regulation.
When will you start hauling pipe or laying pipe?
Right now, we're looking at Q1 26.
But there's been a lot of action. Like I say, that one up to Columbus, that went over the last couple of years, I think. The laterals went a few years ago, and we were affected here by that construction as people bought product, as people stayed in rooms. A lot of these areas are fairly rural, so there was a lot of traveling between the different crews. I'm sure you saw the welders and the different folks staying in rooms and in the area over the last several years. Additional questions for our presenters or any other folks in the audience?
Thank you.
Not too bad. Thank you for coming to present. Thank you, everyone else, for coming.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Ms. Axby?
More of a comment. Is there anybody else going to say anything?
Can't leave.
No. Scott or Rachel, did you want to present anything on this specifically?
Scott wants to.
I was here for the update.
You basically said everything else. So I have comments.
But,
why don't you come up and just run through them? Please give name and address for the record, please. Yeah.
Just to get it on the record with you guys. Thank you. So my name's Dawn Caldwell. My husband and I farm and ranch in south central Nebraska and north central Kansas. I served on our planning and zoning committee in Clay County, so thank you for doing the sometimes not so fun public service. I appreciate you guys doing this. Nebraska has 24 ethanol plants, and Eric, you've mentioned several times what's good for one is good for many, and this is one of those cases where high tides do lift all ships. This is a really, really big deal for Nebraska, and while I have a lot of technical stuff written up here, for instance, a typical Nebraska ethanol plant CI score or carbon intensity score is about 55 or 56 points. We need to get that down because Rachel has a big project that she wants to have happen down here. So in order, one, for sales into those low-carbon fuel markets that that Scott talked about, California is the primary market for Nebraska ethanol. We have others. We have foreign markets. Canada is a great customer. Japan is E10 is becoming real in Japan, finally, and they've always been a good customer for our ag products. We have to get that carbon intensity score to 45 and below. And for alcohol to jet or ethanol to jet, when that technology becomes real and we really are making it, and there's a test plant underway in Georgia right now, we need that to be far closer to zero. And sequestering the carbon dioxide will bring the score for those plants. It'll drop it 35 points overnight the minute they start injecting their carbon dioxide. So that's a really, really big deal for them. To your part of the state, E-Energy Adams has not signed a contract yet that I know of, but having the opportunity with a lateral sure does entice them. And for the farmers in this area, it's really important. When we look at what we talked about the corn price earlier and how depressing it is right now, grinding more corn is a big deal for not only Gage County, but all of the surrounding area. So the more ethanol we can make, the more corn we grind, the better it is for the farmers and ranchers and the pickup dealers on Main Street and everybody else. I want to touch on your Class 6 well question just a little bit. We've been trying for a few years, and it was Senator Flood at the time at the state level, and now Congressman Flood. got a bill passed giving us the ability to inject carbon dioxide in the state of Nebraska, geologically sequester. And we started that process with the EPA shortly after that, changed governors, had to start the process over, changed presidents, had to start the process over. So we have come a very long way, and just recently at the Nebraska Oil and Gas Commission, who is who would oversee those wells, they learned that they have one piece of regulation that has to be added in our state statute for a piece of oversight for them. So they have the language written up already. We will introduce that in January right away in the legislature with an emergency clause, get that scooted through hopefully very quickly so that the EPA can go ahead and grant us the primacy that we need for a Class VI well. And we have a couple of them proposed here in Nebraska, not just the Tallgrass one, but one other one in the Panhandle as well. So glad to answer questions. I don't want to reiterate or redo everything Scott did, but it's my honor to serve, and it starts at the farm gate with the corn. It involves our livestock industry with the distiller's grains, and it's a big deal to sell ethanol through the state of Nebraska and out of the state of Nebraska to where a lot more population is.
Ms. Krackemeyer.
All right. So, yeah, Eric kind of touched on a lot of Engage's stance on this, but as you guys all know, our goal is to drive economic growth here in the community and in the county and attract investment and support the prosperity of Gage County. We support this, the Engage Board of Directors and the Trailblazer Carbon Pipeline Project, which really is forward-thinking infrastructure and an initiative that aligns directly with our strategic priorities and economic development projects that we are actively working on. This project represents really more than just a pipeline. It's a foundational piece of infrastructure that helps ensure long-term viability and competitiveness of industries critical to our local economy, specifically focusing on our ag industry. As we actively work to attract and retain value-added agriculture processors, but also manufacturing operations and clean energy ventures, the ability to offer access to this type of pipeline is increasingly important. And you can see that through federal legislation, state legislation, and so on. Many of the companies that we're in active discussions with at this point view this not only as an environmental benefit, but as a key operational requirement for meeting regulatory and sustainability goals. So by enabling these businesses to lower their carbon intensity scores, this pipeline directly supports the ability to compete for transformative projects and quality jobs here in Gage County. High potential projects in our pipeline ranging from advanced ag processing facilities to sustainable aviation fuel depend on this pipeline being put into active use. Without it, we risk losing these opportunities, and regions with more advanced solutions will take that leap and beat us to the punch. This project promises to generate immediate economic benefits through construction activity, which we've talked about and Scott has highlighted for us today. But it also reinforces Nebraska's leadership in responsible energy infrastructure and rural innovation. So I urge you guys to support this project. The Engage Board is very much in support of this. Without it, this project is not just aligned with our goals. It's essential to realizing the opportunity in front of us. So with that, I'll take any questions as well.
Questions for these two?
I just want to add on a really fun note. We're second to Iowa in ethanol production, which I hate having to say all the time, but it's the reality. But this puts us well ahead in Iowa of Iowa in value of the ethanol and value for the corn market in our region. So while we're probably not going to be there in football again, at least we can be there with this project. Nebraska finally gets to be number one on something. It's really cool.
Never say that again. We will be them in football.
We will. We still have volleyball.
We want to. We have volleyball.
Thank you, guys.
With this, just like anything else, too, we always want to keep our tax basis high, our value in the state. This is one of those items that's centrally assessed. The supervisor that takes the most advantage of that here would be Mr. Juergens down in the Odell area between rail and pipeline. That's another piece of infrastructure here that I would say is heavily taxed and benefits the local school districts, the counties, everyone along the way. As we add infrastructure like this, it does allow us to bring projects in, like the one that Don alluded to here, potentially a SARS project of some sort. We've talked about the corn margin bump that could cause. Contrary to some city belief, that corn does not dissolve and disappear after being processed either. It's still used for feed, which Nebraska is either number one or number two in cattle feeders. So we're always right there at the top too. That enhances some of the other industries that may be coming to our area or may already be here. So it's a trickle-down effect. You've got to get the, as Scott said, the road in place. That'll draw some other pieces in. We need to become attractive or maintain our attractiveness to those other industries. There are a lot of folks that don't like the infrastructure that may be wind turbines. This is one of those, because of the visual more than anything, this is one of those that you can't see, but you can still collect and capitalize on. With that, Ms. Haxby, you had something also, if there aren't any other questions for these two. Ms. Haxby.
Thank you.
Is it a question for them?
Nope, not a question for them. I just want to thank them for coming in today. It was great to have the public become aware of the project, and then also giving us an update on where you're at with the project. The CO2 pipeline is certainly one of the more safer pipelines that you can put in the ground. If there's a leak, it doesn't destroy the environment. And as long as you don't shove your head in the gas, you're likely to survive. So it's a relatively safe project. But let's be honest, the pipeline isn't about a necessity. It's about politics. It makes people feel good to say that the carbon is going somewhere. And if it helps sell our commodities and our landowners are fairly compensated and it's safe, great. But let's not call it innovation when it's just politics. I think there's a saying about putting lipstick on a pig. Farmers and agriculture are already doing the real carbon work. 1 acre of corn absorbs about 36,000 pounds of CO2. A household emits about 12,000 pounds of CO2 in a year. Even factoring in the production, 1 acre of corn cancels out the CO2 footprint of 2 families. When I was a kid, you'd hear this all the time. Now when you want to find it, you can't. I had to do the math myself. And that's because it doesn't fit the current political narrative. It's just political BS. But if it helps markets, compensates landowners, like I said, and it's safe, I won't stand in the way of this kind of project. As long as it doesn't come with extra strings attached. If bringing in a CO2 pipeline also means dragging in other unrelated green mandates or projects that bring in other unwanted green solutions, that's where my support went.
I'll reiterate this. This is, I think, a bunch of fake nonsense capturing the CO2. I'm not going to even pretend that I think that that's going to save the planet or anything like that. I have no interest in that. I have interest in the current economics of it. I, on the other hand, hope it brings projects in. I want to see development. I want to see as much development in our areas as we can. I want to lower people's taxes by having increased industrialization, increased housing growth, increased growth in general. Do I feel that CO2 is going to, the sequestration will save the planet? No. I don't think it'll affect anything one iota, but I think we'd be fools not to capitalize on the current environment that allows for capitalization of this, increased revenues to our farmers, to all producers, increased jobs in our areas. This is our resource, and we need to make use of what we have available to us. That's where I'm at. Nothing against the green monster that's going to save the planet. Don't see it happening, but I do see a real opportunity here. That opportunity was not here 100 years ago. It won't be here in another 50 years or 100 years, I doubt, but it's here now. When we get to the new opportunity, we'll take advantage of that. My 2 cents. Adams.
I'm just very appreciative because I know the 3 school districts that you go through will love the $400,000 a year. So thank you.
I'll echo Ms. Haxby, though, and thank everyone for coming. We really appreciate your time and appreciate the update. If anything changes, please let us know, good or bad. It's always good to know or at least be on the front end of it so we can help however we can. Anything else from the board?
Thank you.
You put the report on the file.
We did not. Mr. Lytle stepped out. There's not a report, actually. It'd just be presentation, I suppose. So
I would say the presentation and the...
Would you like it on file?
Yeah, the presentation and a correspondence received.
You got some letters of support that they referenced to from local people.
Is that a motion, Ms. Axby?
Yes.
We have a motion to put all the presentation as well as the correspondence received on file.
Second.
Motion by Haxby, second by Adams. Please vote. Five in favor. Motion carries. Anything else on the Trailblazer, TPCO2, or anything else pipeline related? With that, we'll move on to the next item then. Thank you all.
I'm still chuckling on your land, man.
Two more months and we get to start watching it again.
Yeah.
Up next.
Take care.
Approve or disapprove advanced correctional health care agreement for September 25 through June of 26. This, of course, would be for the Sheriff's Department.
So move.
Motion by Dorn. This would be the new agreement with the RN involved for helping to keep our inmates out of the hospital, also helping not having to transport so many of them out of the jail to be seen, etc. Second by Adams. There's a big increase because of going from was an LPN before to an RN. The cost increase is approximately $35,000, $33,000. Anything else change in that agreement, Sheriff? Pretty much hours of service, everything else is basically the RN and the price. And that was something that Advanced Correctional Healthcare mandated upon themselves. They decided to start running RNs instead of LPNs. Whether it was for insurance reasons or whatever it was, that was a self-imposed mandate. We have a motion by Dorn, second by Adams, to approve this agreement. Any discussion? I will say this is a money-saving contract for the Sheriff's Department in lieu of taking them all to the hospital as medical is needed. No other discussion? Please vote. Five in favor. Motion carries. Lastly, approve or disapprove resolution on special use permit 2025-1 for the operation. Is that right? 2025-1?
The permit number.
Okay. Permit number 2025-1 for the operation of a commercial kennel located on a tract of land in the southeast corner of southwest quarter of section 865 of Claytonia Township in Gage County. Which would be resolution 25-09.
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion by Haxby, second by Dorn. And this is in Ms. Haxby's district. At planning and zoning, there was no opposition. At our public hearing, there was no opposition. It passed at P&Z with a unanimous vote. Any questions or comments on this resolution? Seeing none, we have a motion by Haxby, second by Dorn, to pass resolution 25-09. Please vote. Five in favor. Motion carries. We're at the end of the agenda here. Does anyone have anything else for the good of the order? If not, we will adjourn at 10:28.